Welcome to Free Thinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston and the Conscious Resistance Network. My name is Derek Bros. I'm here with Micah Jackson and Johnny. What's going on, guys?
On the screen. KPFT for everything they do, and 100,000 to broadcast ideas on KPFT, and I thank all the shows that do, and I thank everybody that makes the pledge to keep KPFT afloat. Now's a dire time, right, Derek?
Yeah, please do go to kpft.org if you want to contribute, because we've said this a few times to our online audience, those who might not know, but we broadcast this show live on the internet, but it also airs every Friday on 90.1 KPFT on the FM dial here in Houston. And KPFT just celebrated 50 years being on air, and commercial free, corporate free, the kind of stuff that we like and we enjoy. We get to express our opinions as loudly as we like,
and we get to pick the music we like,
and usually we get to take calls when we are in the studio. So if you want to support, help keep KPFT going, and maybe eventually get back into the studio taking phone calls,
I can't wait for that day.
Then please do visit kpft.org and consider making an investment.
I miss the call-ins, I really do, but I do love the chat engagement and the engagement in other
Google call-ins.
We miss the call-ins. We miss everybody. MOD, we miss the station, we miss the equipment, and we're thankful still for KPFT and everybody that supports it. We got a lot of local news to get into.
Let's get into
and
it.
I saw this one, and both Derek and I ran into it, of the local narcotics officer that's kind of stepping out amidst the investigation. What's up with that, Derek?
So I was saying this before we were starting, that anybody who's paid attention to this show or paid attention to Houston politics or cops and any of that stuff, you've heard of the Tuttle raid, the Tuttle case, Dennis Tuttle and Regina Nicholas killed in their own homes by HPD Narcotics Unit. Gerald Goines, a couple other officers been charged now, one facing murder. Thousands of cases reviewed.
Who was chief of police when it happened?
Art Acevedo, who's a politician / police officer, who... You know, there's just basically, we've gone over this. You guys know they've been absolved of all responsibility. They have not tried to make amends with the family, even though they lied about the members of the family. They claimed there was guns and drugs and made up a whole story that we now know is fake. And we're getting more and more information about this. This latest story says a scrutinized HPD narcotics officer resigns amid investigation. Houston police narcotics officer is now under investigation after he resigned last month. The officer, Juan Martinez, joined the department in 2005. He was assigned to the narcotics division and relieved in July 2016. He resigned August 10th. So it seems like he was relieved of duty. Then he resigns. He probably knew that he, you know, there was, if he was up to whatever he was up to, that they were on to him, because there are, everybody who's probably dirty and is paying attention sees that the investigators are up in that narcotics unit, and that's basically getting them to start investigating anybody who's dirty. I mean, I doubt they're getting all the way to the bottom, though. We know, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, Micah, how the DA's office has been basically using taxpayer money to hire this high profile investigator, but then they've just sidelined him, and he's complaining that they won't even let him be involved in the investigation. But the Chronicle reports several law enforcement sources previously said that Martinez was being investigated for inappropriate conduct related to undercover operations and confidential informants, which we have a huge problem with the undercover officers and informants. After the Chronicle first reported Martinez was being investigated, Chief Art Acevedo told reporters that he was the subject of a proactive internal investigation and promised to provide more information once the investigation had been concluded. And Acevedo just then said that investigators provided evidence to the Harris County DA's office and the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District. So it sounds like federal attempt at federal charges. Both groups declined to prosecute. The department closed an internal administration into the incident after Martinez resigned. And he says, I'm precluded from saying anything further. So that's interesting. They're saying that the local DA's office and like a federal attorney of the Southern District of Texas declined to prosecute whatever this guy is being investigated for. And they still won't tell us, but the HPD is claiming
that
they're
really transparent.
Yeah, it's totally transparent, right? They're investigating one of their own. They won't tell us what he's being investigated for, potentially trying to get federal charges against him. Nobody's taking them up. And this is a part of the same unit that we know was involved in the Tuttle raid and the murder of two Houstonians. So more in the, as Micah said, the fourth largest city in the empire. We've got a few other local ones I know you guys wanted to get into. Somebody wanted to get this police oversight board. I mean, this is the solution, right? They tell us we need police oversight boards. We need independent boards. But then there's still controversy with them, right?
Yeah. We need somebody to negotiate with the unions in some senses about officers being charged for their misconduct, you know, or somebody needs to have a stronger voice. You said, you talked about subpoena power as well.
It turns out that Audrey L. Relifer, whose mentally ill son Kenneth was shot and killed by a police officer in 2012, is stepping aside in the oversight board. This is a longtime member. Relifer stands in the intersection where he was shot Thursday, February 11th, and basically talks about what happened. The same officer was involved soon after in another shooting. You know, sometimes if things happen, they happen again. And the incident has sparked a wrongful death case at HPD. Challenges the quality of HPD's reviews of all officer-involved shootings from 2009 to 2012. It sounds like, you know, when you bring up the doubles, people need to question them much further. And that was under the outgoing Chief McClellan. And let's get a little deeper into this story. Yeah, what's going on?
Well, it shows, like you said, that this is going back to the previous police chief, not the guy we were just talking about, the politician Art Acevedo, but Chief McClellan, who I definitely remember when I first started going out to question HPD. That was the chief that I was dealing with, questioning him about stingrays and other things like that. So I'm sure that his department, you know, his administration was probably up to similar things. And as this case is showing, there's some controversy. This officer involved in a wrongful death case against HPD, challenges the quality. I mean, you just said this, but it's interesting. Challenging the quality of HPD reviews of officer-involved shootings, which is, of course, what we're dealing with the Tuttles. It's an officer-involved shooting. And if they would have had their way, they would have just lied about them and, you know, lied about other cases.
It turns out that in a pointed letter to Mayor Sylvester Turner dated last Thursday, board member Kristen Anderson wrote that the civilian police watchdog does not serve its stated purposes, and it provides cover by making it appear that independent oversight is taking place. So we should think about that a little bit. It's kind of like the cameras providing cover for the narrative. Like, you have this,
but they can be conveniently turned off.
Well, that's the whole thing. And like you said earlier, when I interviewed Art Acevedo, the chief of police here in Houston, on the streets during these protests recently, that he was out there trying to act like he's on the side of the people, him and the police union, Grimaldi, said that the people don't want, in some cases they say the people don't want, other cases they say they don't need subpoena power. It's like, no, we already have this oversight board that's, and you know, they already have the ability to, you know, issue reports and do this and that, but they have no real actual subpoena power. And they claim that
The individual tells us that they've served as a member of the board since 2011. So you're talking about someone who's seen it for almost a decade. And after nearly a decade of work, they concluded that the very design of the board itself makes it structurally impossible to accomplish the goals articulated in its original charge. Imagine that. I now conclude that my energy would be better focused on projects that rethink policing and do the important transformative work to create safe communities and justice, particularly for marginalized community. The original charge of the board was to, quote, provide a system of increased accountability and transparency, to use that word again, and to facilitate resident input into the internal investigative process of the HPDs.
So, I mean, for those who are just tuning in, you're listening to Freethinker Radio, and this is, I think, part of the ongoing conversation about police violence, police abuse. Should you defund them? Should you, you know, support militarization, whatever, right? When people start talking about solutions, like you're saying, Micah, the body camera gets put forward as a solution to stop police violence, but that hasn't stopped police violence. And as we're going to go over in a bit, police violence is even continuing during pandemic times. But, you know, so people say put the body cameras on them, but that doesn't stop things. Sometimes the body cameras aren't on. And then people say, hey, get independent oversight boards. Okay, well, you get a board, but it's not truly independent. It doesn't have any power.
This person with a PhD that went from being a board member for a decade to now arguing that it's useless and should be disbanded because it's actually serving the opposite of its intended purpose. How often do we see
that? As in, like, yeah, they can arrest you, but when you try to complain on them, you get nothing but bureaucracy.
Yeah. So this wasn't just some angry person that sat on the board forever. This was an educated individual.
It is.
Basically, it's like a member of the inside from their team, right?
Yeah,
like,
it should be, or at least should be the approachable version of someone who's trying to do something positive for people's lives with the police review board. Now, whether that's their team or not, that's a different discussion, yeah. But they should at least be someone that they speak to.
All right, we're going to continue our look here at police in the Houston area as we continue Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston. And Micah, you also pulled this one up, I think. Bel Air, another city right here in the midst of the city of Houston, now pushing towards surveillance tools that help monitor license plates. We talked about this before. Now it's local. Automatic license plate readers, you know. They're all over the country, but, you know.
Yeah, it's big money, you know. Surveillance is big business, and it's going to be increasingly big business. Turns out that the BPDs, the Bel Air Police Department, could soon be using a new surveillance tool to monitor the people, the license plates of cars that travel through the city. The city council approved a measure allowing BPD to submit a request for funding for a pilot program that investigates the utility of automated license plate readers on August 17th. Monday's request considered installing 10 ALPRs on select roadways within the city of Bel Air, capturing license plate information and comparing that information to a national database immediately. The technology will store the images, and you can imagine that this information will get into a database. The technology will store the images on a private server maintained by the private vendor, Flock Safety. A little bit of corporatism there.
Well, they have safety in their names. So.
Yeah. According to BPD's request, the quoted price for a 10-camera system will be $27,500, including installation. Small price to be monitored all the time. According to Bel Air's assistant police chief, the system has motion-activated cameras that will photograph every license plate that passes in front of them. The cameras will then compare photos to a national database. And we'll alert the department of any hot list license plates. It might be okay if it stopped there, right? Such as vehicles suspected of being stolen, because obviously somebody was violated to steal their car, or cars connected to Amber Alerts, because, you know, human trafficking, etc. The camera also captures the make, model, and color of vehicles while using artificial intelligence to create a searchable database for use in investigation. The data will be stored on the server for 30 days, at least. In the meantime, authorized users within the BPD will be able to access the stored data if it is relevant to any ongoing investigation. I'm just going to kind of stop there in the little picture they have from the Chronicle. It shows a really awesome Dodge Charger from back in the day, but it's got it also puts the software input on there, and it's like last visit 3:15 p.m. Seen three of the last 30 days. Resident, no. Oh, might as well pull them over.
Well, see, and this is what I want people to know, that when we're talking about a city of Bel Air that's in the Houston area, but it's technically its own city. No, it's just a small, like, you, most people would drive through it and think you're still in Houston because you basically are, but there's a part that they have their own council, their own mayor, their own police force and things like that. So how do you know that you as a Houstonian driving through Bel Air, you know, you're clearly going to get mixed up in the system? And it shows that even one of the council members was asking specifically, like, is this going to be used to monitor people and bother them?
Well, my other thing, I was just
population of Bel Air, 16,800.
Yeah, I was just thinking about this as well. I mean, it sounds like a bit of a stretch, but I mean, in China, you know how they have the facial recognition tracking. You know, this is in a way a form of like that same thing. You know, it's just another thing. Like, so you could have your face recognized when you're walking down the street. Well, now you can't drive without, you know, immediately. You know, like your record has to be perfectly clean. And we all, well, not everyone.
I want to just add to that, Michael, you mentioned the hot list there briefly. Like, yeah, in the best case scenario, it's used to catch some child who's been kidnapped and an Amber Alert goes out and they track a vehicle using the automatic license plate readers, and that helps them find them, right? It's the best case scenario. But I've been writing about this for a number of years as it's grown around the country. We have clear examples of police using this to track, like, for example, one cop thought his wife was cheating on him. And what they can do is they can create hot lists of certain vehicles that, you know, they think, oh, this person might be committing crime or whatever. And it automatically triggers one of their hot lists if the person is in a certain area. So this cop was using it to, like, monitor his wife's behavior and see where, you know, where she was going and get notifications. So it's clear that these technologies can be abused and can be used for other purposes. So, I mean, hopefully people hearing this, and maybe people here in Bel Air in this part of Houston might actually question it. I don't know. I haven't heard anybody challenging or questioning. And on this show, outside of our regular audience, it does seem like a lot of people in the quote unquote mainstream have already accepted surveillance and don't even see it as much of an inconvenience or think about it that way.
Bel Air is bordered by Houston on a whole bunch of sides and West University Place on another side. And West University Place installed the readers are manufactured by a different company at all entrances to the city.
I mean, people shouldn't have
these cars.
I mean, just think about it. Like, it's not even necessarily the technology that's bad. It's the operators. Like, there's been time and time again. Yeah, we cannot trust these people using the technology.
It's power.
And either way, they're building these profiles on different drivers. So, you know, they
exactly.
can see and just be like, make a snap judgment. Like, well, you know, he had this certain pass, so might as well pull him over and see what I can get. You know, I'm about to meet, like, I mean, I'm not saying
well,
that
the
every
thing
cop is going to be that way.
All the systems are becoming more and more interconnected. That's the big
yeah.
problem. Is like, prior to 9/11, there was some separation, or at least the assumed separation. We can get into the fusion centers later, like, that of these systems being integrated, DHS communicating with the local cops, sharing this. And the thing is, also, you got to consider automatic license plate readers in the context of, well, you also have, you know, surveillance cameras, stingray cameras, you got facial recognition cameras, all these different databases speaking to each other. So it's not just one system. It's like all of this layered on top of each other, multiple systems. So, and just as an example, with the fusion centers, there was I read one of the reports in the Blue Leaks documents showed that this cop from Maine pulled over somebody and started questioning him. The person like refused to cooperate, which was within their rights because they hadn't done anything wrong. And they told the cop, like, I'm not going to give you my ID. I'm not going to let you take a picture of me. I'm not going to give you my name. Like, he wouldn't give him anything, right? And the cop kept trying to bug him and question him. And eventually he backed off. But then the cop, after the person drove off and went about their life, the cop went to the local fusion center and was like, hey, can you look at the cameras around there and tell me who they are? Or like, look them, you know, zoom in on them using this CCTV camera. And then let's use that facial recognition, run it in some databases, run it across social media so I can find out who it was. So they already have like all these different systems that they can plug
yeah.
you into if they really want to find
That's
out who you are. All right. Yeah, we appreciate all the comments. If you guys got anything to say, just go ahead and leave it there. We'll bring you on screen. We're going to continue checking out what's going on in Texas and then expand a little bit wider.
I got a headline for Houston real quick. Houston City Council approves $2 million art support program. You can get into that if you are into the arts and find out how that is generated and what happens.
Well, tell us a little bit about this defunding the police property tax thing, Mike. I mean, I think the whole situation's all screwed up no matter which way you look at it, but
it turns out that Governor Abbott has, I think it's interesting because we've been talking about defunding the police for a minute, and as long as it's come up in the national dialogue, it's kind of interesting to see the way that some people you think would at least want to join the dialogue are kind of sitting on the sidelines still. We'll talk about that after we get into the story. But it turns out that Governor Abbott called for a ban on raising property taxes in any city that cuts police department funding. I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, there's so many ways to feel about it. Assailing plans to reduce police budgets as a threat to public safety. So, you know, if you want to look at what police do and start saying maybe we don't have to spend so much money on the police, and maybe to do that we should ask less of them and have them focus on things like murder, rape, theft, and some, you know, maybe severe traffic things like that, and cut in that way, that sounds like what I've heard a lot of people talking about for a long time, reducing the size of the state, right? And why, you know, and so then the governor says, well, you can't raise property taxes if you start cutting any police department funding. That's kind of crazy.
See, that's just
but
a threat.
But at the same time,
like,
if you're for smaller government and reduce police state, this would not be a threat to you. You might actually see this as an incentive to go down to the city council and start arguing for some practical spending on police budgets. Taxes guaranteed not to go up if you can get down there and get them to reduce about what this is saying here.
So if you can take away some money, get them to take away some money from the police, then the governor's going to step in and say, okay, well, now your local bodies can't charge any higher property taxes, and the people win, basically.
Yes, they get
the police focused
on, if they do it right,
yeah.
They get the police focused on violent or crimes where there's a victim, because I don't think anybody here on this show advocates violence in any sort of way, so that's really good. And so then you also, at the same time as getting police to be able to focus on what we would see as crimes, they get earned more respect, they get less detracted into other things, the money spent well, less taxes are taken from the people, and we have less of a police state.
The whole reason he's saying this, too,
we know it's not really for our good.
The whole reason he's saying this thing, which is ridiculous, is that Abbott is crying because
in Austin
they voted to take away millions of dollars away from the cops into other programs, you know.
Not Houston.
No, not in Houston. They gave them more money.
Yeah, we're doing the opposite. National news.
They gave Houston. But that, think about that. Like, this is, to me, is the same thing as when you see these attempts to pass laws that say, like, if you criticize Israel, it's anti-Semitic, and, you know, or you're going to lose funding, or just all these. It's just like threats and extortion is what it comes down to. Is like, if you try to defund the police, and not even you're saying like we're going to take away all the money of the police, but think about if we're just like, hey, maybe we're going to take away those tanks they have and those MRAPs and those drones and all those freaking camo really and militarized tools. But no, if you do that, like, well, then you. But to me, though, the whole thing I take
focus is, on the. What we've seen before, where false overtime, false hours, things like that. I mean, start like having
stop arresting people for victimless stuff, first of all. Yeah, and exactly. And that in a huge way, that could take away a lot of the cops' budget. I mean, we've talked about these ideas over
the
years.
And also the burden on them. I doubt they really joined up, at least some of them, to be cops, to, in the ideal world, to just go be revenue collectors.
I think many cops are conflicted in that sense. Like, you know, they would, like, there's a lot of things they would get their buddies out of because they see them as tenacious or trivial. And those are the same things that maybe should just be considered.
I just think this is one of those issues that most of what we would consider, even though I think it's a false dichotomy, what we consider the left and the right, they ought to be able to have this conversation. It's in both of their interests from what they profess, at least.
But I do agree with you. I think it's a false dichotomy because at the end of the day, it assumes that for one, the state of Texas and the government, you know, has the right to charge whatever they want on our property taxes, which means you never own it. Or, and then the other hand, we can't decide how much money we want to give to the people who are supposed to be the community protectors. Otherwise, you know, they're going to threaten you this other way. Either way, it's like we're not getting consulted. Well, and he supposedly said that if this plan goes through, it'll start taking place next January. So we'll see if it's just political posturing or whatever. But
I think it's a good dialogue that the people should get involved in. You may not value the constructs of the government or anything, but people do go to City Hall, they go to these things, and they present, you know, their positions. So all I've got to say is this seems like a really powerful dialogue point for freedom-minded or even social justice-minded people to join the conversation. The more people in the conversation, the more accurate we're going to get something that mirrors what we as a mass want from the police and want from these people. I don't expect us to be satisfied, but the more they know we're talking about it, the less likely they are to act dull.
All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to the next story. We're going to go to music soon. We're going to be playing a song from an old artist, old Houston artist, Harold Borup, in just a few moments. But I know Johnny's got this special, close to his heart, hot sauce story he's been dying to tell you guys about, so we're going to get into that.
It's not that much of a story, but...
Oh, don't act like you weren't begging to talk about this.
I do love the sauce, man. I'm not going to lie. I'm big on the sauce. And I don't know if you got it on the screen, but yeah, after almost 30 years, the Tears of Joy hot sauce shop is closing on 6th Street in Austin. So if anyone's ever visited Austin and been in a
look at all that sauce.
Rare hot sauce store, it's unfortunately going down because of all this COVID stuff. They've been open since 1993, and they started selling tamales and, you know, just moved to awesome spicy things. You can find all kinds of rare sauces here, but... unfortunately, the business is going to be over in August. So.
And did they say this was COVID related? Like
it is COVID related. They said
27 years. Holy crap!
Yeah, they weren't able to survive it.
So that means like the shop's going away. They're not going to be selling their sauce online.
They are selling their sauce online. It says Rush says the website tearsofjoysauces.com will still be there to place orders on your mini hot sauces, salsas, and other spicy products he's become known for. So
a joke about that story, but I mean, it's a very realistic repercussion of what's going on with businesses in COVID-19.
Because it is all those specialty shops.
I liken it to a war of attrition between the bigs. We're getting bigger and printing money like there's no tomorrow, and everybody else. And I think that's the most important thing to think about in some ways with your consumer dollar. Think about who's going to survive COVID. Do they need your consumer dollar as much as some of these others? And if you're doing okay, maybe things like this would be good gifts for people. Look for like dynamic ways to spend your consumer dollar that might support your values. I don't know. We're going to go to music.
Let's continue on because we're talking about this business going into bankruptcy. And I got this other story that you mentioned as pandemic stretches on, retail bankruptcies approach highest number in a decade. And this is what I wanted us to hit for a moment, is these are the other realities. People are talking so much about the concerns, of course, about their health. And in the second half of the show, we're going to talk all about some of the things you might not be hearing in the mainstream about COVID-19 and some of the reasons people are asking questions. But there's many folks who are not really considering so much the cost of the economic impact of what's going on. And that's really what we want to focus on here for a moment. So go ahead, Mike. And
I think the economic impact of what's going on, you know, it's really important, because I'd like to just point out that we were having severe economic difficulties before this even happened. And afterwards, everybody shut down. So this story gets kind of into it. As coronavirus pandemic casts a long shadow, because, you know, we got to go away with the idea that it's coronavirus that caused this. Not politicians, not a broke monetary system, but the coronavirus, right? Cast a long shadow over the U.S. economy. Retail bankruptcies are approaching their highest number in a decade. I saw numbers in the thousands, but this story gets a little bit more focused on retail. Matote, owner of Lord & Taylor, the Taylor Brands, parent company of Men's Warehouse, filed for bankruptcy Sunday. They're the latest retailers pushed to the brink by the pandemic. The addition brings the total retail bankruptcy filings so far this year to 43, according to tracking by S&P Global Market Intelligence. Meanwhile, everybody talks about how it's the best economy ever, right? With 5 months left in the year, there have already been more retail bankruptcies this year than in the past 8 years, according to S&P Global. There were 48 filings by retailers in 2010, according to S&P, following tremendous tumult and financial strain across the industry during the Great Recession. In 2008, 441 retailers filed for bankruptcy, according to S&P. The pandemic has compounded challenges that some retailers faced even before COVID began to spread across the county. Some, such as Lord & Taylor and JCPenney, were already on the rocks, having trouble reaching new customers as e-commerce. And this is part of the narrative that I also think is false. As e-commerce brands won more of the young shoppers' attention and dollars, JCPenney and all them have webs didn't connect. Others like Neiman Marcus were saddled with debt, you know, not saving for a rainy day or a pandemic. Jan Knifen, a retail consultant and former executive at the May department stores, which was eventually folded into Macy's, said for many of the retailers, the pandemic only sped up their likely appearance in bankruptcy court. Yet the coronavirus pandemic quickly pushed them over the edge. Yeah, with everybody not able to shop or go anywhere, imagine that. Shelter-in-place orders temporarily shuttered stores for weeks. Americans' spending habits changed. People actually stopped using their credit cards as much. As people coped with pay cuts and job losses, or had less of an appetite for new clothing because of working from home and attending few social gatherings, or what about just the uncertainty of the future in such an environment? The pandemic could also weaken a typically busy shopping season for apparel retailers. Back to school. I mean, come on, who has to go buy back to school for your kids' Zoom classroom?
No more fun.
Maybe we can end Black Friday.
Yeah, skipping ahead quickly, more bankruptcy filings are expected. The coming months will also reveal which of the bankrupt companies will find a way to survive through new ownership or restructuring, and which ones will be forced to permanently close stores. Picking winners and losers, and we've talked about that from the beginning of this on. I mean, this is part of the process of picking winners and losers. It's not just the stimulus dollars that pick them. It's also how they're able to deal with their debt. And women's apparel store, J. Jill, Chico's, Francesca's, an experimental toy retailer, Build-A-Bear. I've heard of so many restaurants that are just nailed too. Pier 1 Imports, we talked about them early. They're gone.
Toys R Us.
Yeah, yeah. Toys R Us, Chuck E. Cheese. The list goes on and on. And I think this is the real thing to notice. Neiman Marcus also, they're just getting beat.
Well, and I want to reemphasize what you said earlier, Micah, that especially for those listening on KPFT, 90.1 KPFT, you're listening to Freethinker Radio, that this is a story. These stories, I mean, if you've heard our show before, we've been covering this. These situations do, as Micah mentioned, predate COVID-19. So do not, you know, buy into the assumption that this is only happening because some people can't go to work and this and that. Because, I mean, the reality I would say is, Micah, when I go out, people are out shopping. People are out eating. Despite the news constantly telling me everybody's staying home, since we're all staying home, I'm like, people are out. Maybe not as many people, but like you said, this was already in the process. Sure, this didn't help. But it's not like this magically came out of nowhere.
I mean, people are still getting food. They're getting that money, free money for helicopter money, right? 23 Shell oil companies are expected to be bankrupt this year. $30 billion in debt. We went from 764 rigs
are idle now. 176 rigs are the only rigs active in the United States. Only 176 oil rigs. Think about that a little bit. All kinds. Ann Taylor's closing 1,600 stores. But yeah, it goes on and on. So, you know, we see gold and silver spiking. We see the stock market
the signs are disconnected from having customers almost, it seems. Well, the
signs
are there. And we've been talking over the months about the Great Reset, Mike. And on that front, just to, you mentioned the stock market, I saw that the World Economic Forum, they said, oh, well, we're thinking of how to create a completely new type of market to monitor and, you know, exchanges, and it'll be digital. And actually, I don't know if you saw, they officially
did. That'll be the first reset, but it won't be the Great Reset.
They did officially.
It'll be the banker's reset instead of
well,
the
that's,
real reset.
It's the banker's version of the Great Reset.
Yeah.
They did officially introduce the digital dollar bill now. It's been reintroduced, not just the coronavirus talk from months ago. Now it's being reintroduced again. They're actually officially considering it. We're going to go to some music, though, guys. Take a quick break here on Freethinker Radio. We're going to play, as I said, an old Houston artist, Harold Borup, You Go This Way and I Go Away. Doctors in Germany questioning the pandemic narrative.
Huh?
Imagine that. Maybe people's deaths being falsely attributed.
Questions?
And talking about the police state in Australia and New Zealand. So please do stay tuned. This is Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston. We'll be right back.
Get her to the hospital on time. You conquer your own fear, and you'll have it by calming her, making her comfortable. You ask her to remove her underclothes. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back to Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston. That was Harold Borop. What is it called again, Micah? You go this way and I'll go away.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I don't know why they got all the cameras on me, but all right, welcome back, guys. Thank you for KPFT for hosting our show here, Freethinker Radio, where we're here every week on the FM airwaves and, of course, across the internet. Right now, we are live on about five different Facebook pages.
Let's talk about those things.
We're live on the YouTube channel for the Conscious Resistance. We're also live on float.app for anybody who's looking for a non-Facebook, non-YouTube way to live stream content like this. Check out float, float.app, and you can find out more about that. Speaking of social media, just a real quick mention for those who might not be hip to it, the continued censorship, yes, I said it, censorship, of independent media, alternative media, and activists continues on Facebook, as Facebook Mark Zuckerberg recently just announced a crackdown. The article you're looking at on the screen says a crackdown against anarchists. I would say it's a bit more broad than that, but yes, definitely folks who describe themselves as left-wing anarchists have been taken down off Facebook. I mean, for those,
how can you be a wing anarchist?
It says
it's the same as the mainstream left-right division, just another version of it.
Facebook justifies their crackdown by comparing anarchists and anti-fascists to U.S.-based militia organizations and QAnon.
Yeah, they took down like thousands of QAnon accounts.
Wow, this
accounts.
Is a huge umbrella.
That's what I'm saying. It's really weird. But the common uniting factor, at least according to Facebook, is that these different groups have advocated or celebrated violence, or celebrate violence. Some people on the left
are
do advocate and celebrate violence.
I'll say the code.
But yeah, the U.S.
do.
Military is still able to promote and recruit people through Facebook. And I mean, so clearly
what's
Facebook has an agenda and the people they selectively delete. But I'm just saying, I'm sure that not everybody who got deleted is completely innocent of that.
Just exactly. One rule for the rulers and one for everybody else again.
And to me, ultimately, and I talked about this a little bit earlier today with some friends, that we've been seeing this since 2016, shadow banning. You know, people used to think that was a fake thing, that they were throttling people's accounts and stopping traffic. We know that's true now from Google whistleblowers and other documents that have come out. People used to say, oh, you're lying, whenever they would unsubscribe people or just delete accounts. Now it's happening left, right. These types of folks, for example, some of these left-wing anarchists might have been some of the people who said, oh, who cares about those right-wing anarchists, the voluntarists, when they were being deleted, when the anti-media was being deleted. And I'm just trying to say that it's unfortunate that people's political divisions keep them from seeing that if they take down this person, they're going to come for you too.
They keep them from standing up for something they might believe in, like a level playing field as far as what we'd like to think about the internet and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, but just wanted to throw that out there. It wasn't a huge story, but it's definitely just a continued part of this.
Someone asked what the article's definition of anarchist was, and I think that might be
they don't have
about.
One
that's what I was saying. That's why I say left-wing anarchist, because specifically it talks about the pages associated with itsgoingdown.org and crime think. When I first got into anarchism, it's definitely one of the first things you get exposed to. They run a lot of well-known left-wing sites. They mainly promote like anti-capitalist, kind of anti-white supremacist, more collectivist or communist version of anarchism. And a lot of them do believe in what they call the propaganda of the deed, which is that acts of destruction or even property damage are valid and, you know, seen as a tactic that you could employ. And like, that's not, they don't have any qualms about the use of violence like some people in other philosophical schools of anarchism might, you know. They're so that's why I'm saying, like, some of these people might really be the type that actually do advocate in some cases for the use of violence. But I wouldn't say that's all of them. And that doesn't mean it justifies taking their channels down. But yeah, it was specifically It's Going Down in Crime Think. And those are websites and pages associated more with the left side of anarchism. And then, yeah, it's weird, though, that they lump them in with QAnon types and militia types all in one.
So there's these anarchists that don't believe in rulers.
Basically,
that would be violent for a cause. And I assume this cause is something other than preserving their own life.
Yeah, you know, their version is to, like, in order to, let's say, like, abolish capitalism, then, you know, you have to overthrow the capitalist class.
But the military
class.
Is fine.
No, I definitely think they probably have an issue with the military. These are more likely the people who are the types who are on the streets, like, said, let's say, in Seattle and Portland, who are trying to, like, physically fight with the cops. Like, these are, that now they're being targeted. Whereas the, and again, for lack of a better term, right anarchists, right libertarians type, we've been getting censored, and I include myself in that, just that's my personal labeling. For years, you know, so that's why I was saying, like, some of these folks probably laughed whenever the quote unquote conspiracy theorists were getting deleted, or when
those
right wing anarchists,
issues.
Oh, screw them, they're not real anarchists or whatever. But now, again, it's made its way across the spectrum where it's affecting everybody. People have been saying for a while, it's just the conservatives being targeted. It's like, no, I know plenty of anti-media was conservative. Then Press News wasn't conservative. Like, you know, we've been targeted. And so, yeah, I
mean, people don't even know what conservative means anymore.
Punch right mentality that lets it go on because they're like, oh, well, it's the opposition's voice. Who cares about the
That's why they were scooping people up in Portland and nobody took up arms.
Yeah, kind of, because they eliminated that other step right beforehand.
Like, oh, well, let's go ahead and jump forward to a story, Mike. I know you had this one about crime dropping. Like,
Man, how about that? Crime fell in the early months of the pandemic. But fatal shootings didn't slow. I guess that crime it was offset by the other crime, right? Fatal shootings by members of PDs did not appear to ease up even amid the coronavirus pandemic. As this says, in Blacks, Latinos, and Native Americans continue to be disproportionately affected by deadly police shootings compared to white people. A study released Wednesday by the ACLU. Pandemic with far fewer people traveling outside their homes and police departments reducing contact with public so as to not spread the virus, police have continued to shoot people at the same rate so far in 2020 as they did during the same period of every year between 2015, 16, 17, 18, 19, which was based on data analysis from the University of Nebraska at Omaha, the number of people fatally shot by police in 2020 over the previous 5 years.
It's almost like there's a pandemic of police violence.
Yeah, you know, go ahead and make people put their mask on, though. We thought maybe police would slow down their killing, you know, could take some time off.
Just like the mayor said, could you all criminals just chill?
From January to June of this year, there were 511 fatal police shootings. Fatal. You know, there's 500 people dead. You know, we talk about the coronavirus and the death count. Well, for police shooting, 500 were dead, according to a report, up from 484 last year. So this is with everybody down. We got, you know, what percent is that? Dang near 7 or so during the same period over the same period last year. During the first 6 months of 2018, there were 550 fatal police shootings. 2017, there were 493. In 2016, there were 498. In 2015, 465. So you get like
consistently around 500.
Yeah, and we're peaking 511 right now. Researchers, and we still got the year left, right? Researchers examined figures from a database maintained by the Washington Post, which has been tracking deadly police shootings through news accounts, social media posts, and police reports in the wake of the 2014 killing of Michael Brown, teenager, by police in Ferguson, Missouri. The database has found that police shootings, fatal ones, remained at a constant of nearly 1,000 per year since 2015, which the Post says can be explained via a probability theory that suggests the quantity of rare events in huge populations tends to remain stable absent major societal changes, such as fundamental shift in police culture. Police culture, think about that, y'all, or extreme restrictions on gun ownership. Researchers said that they wondered if a once-in-a-century public health crisis generated increased social isolation would result in a reduction of police killings. We want to express alarm that even when the nation was on lockdown during the height of the COVID pandemic, that didn't stop police fatality shootings at any rate. Offer said the report didn't posit why the number of shootings remained at the same level in 2020, although Offer offered that it underscores how policing continued in those months and highlighted that not everyone had the ability to quarantine in a home. So some people were out, you know.
Well, I just want to add to that, because I honestly, like, I would have no problem believing that police violence has continued during this whole thing, but I definitely don't trust the database ran by the Washington Post. That's just me. But just because I know they have their own agendas, but I think that the numbers would pan out, whether, you know, the specific numbers are exact or not, because we know that police violence, while maybe not being the number one thing that you're at threat for, I think that generally, though, when you consider police interactions, yes, there are plenty of hundreds, let's say thousands of police interactions where nothing goes wrong. But then the ones when they do go wrong, the police have basically immunity and can get away with all kinds of things.
You know, the ACLU report also identified 7 states, Alabama, Alaska, Colorado, Connecticut, Florida, Montana, and Nevada, having substantially more fatal shootings in the first 6 months of 2020 than past years.
So yeah, all kinds of stuff. I'm glad the ACLU is stepping up and saying stuff about that. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to hit now our COVID
out. Oh, Houston Police Chief is there.
COVID minute here.
I can't miss this one, though. After welcoming a new class of 74 recruits to the Police Academy this week, Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo said others in the community made clear that they don't want less policing. They want good policing.
Oh, is that what we made clear?
We made it clear whenever we went and protested and tried to get them to change.
He got a little bit more face time in the media. Yeah, there. That's from actually NBC. It seems like our police chief is in the news all over the country.
All right, we're going to move on now. We got about 10 minutes left for the KPFT edition of the show, and I know that there's a few more important stories. Particularly, we haven't talked much about COVID itself. We've talked about the impacts of COVID, the economic impacts, what's happening with cops during COVID. But now we're talking about some stories that are actually, I think, maybe, hopefully, maybe bringing up some questions in your mind, especially KPFT audience. I can hear everything right next to it. This report here is saying that German doctors this past week held a some sort of council. I mean, I can't read the exact language because it is in German, but we have this report from Collective Evolution that shows that 500 German doctors and scientists have signed on as representatives of an organization called the Corona Extra Parliamentary Inquiry Committee to investigate what's happening on our planet with regards to COVID-19. Now, again, it's funny to me because Collective Evolution, I know that this is not necessarily a news source that many people would consider to be credible or maybe mainstream enough for you just based on the name, but they even have to address that. The article itself says, is this article fake news? No, and it's like they're sort of prefacing it in preparation for a fact checker saying, we're literally just quoting from this council, this committee. You can say that you think the committee's wrong, but the fact is we're reporting on something that happened, so it can't be fake news.
So now we have to add that caveat. But yeah, article we write.
Well, they even ask, like, is this fake news? No, because we're actually quoting. So I just wanted to put that out there for those who are like, oh my God, these people are claiming that. Because again, the doctors themselves say we have a lot of evidence that it's a fake story all over the world. What do they mean by that? They start talking about how they believe that the World Health Organization is misrepresenting the facts, and specifically in Germany. They basically said that they were established to investigate all things that pertain to the new coronavirus, such as the severity of the virus and whether or not the actions taken by governments around the world, including lockdowns, are justified or causing more harm. So this is a little statement from them. As the Corona Extra Parliamentary Inquiry Committee, we will investigate why these restrictive measures were imposed upon us in our country as part of COVID-19, why people are suffering now, and whether there is proportionality of the measures of the disease caused by SARS-CoV-2 virus. So basically, is it justified, you know, for everything happening? We have serious doubts that these measures are proportionate. This needs to be examined. And since the parliaments, neither the opposition parties nor the ruling parties, have convened a committee, and it is not even planned, it is high time that we took this into our own hands. We will invite and hear experts here in the Corona Speaker Group. These are experts from all areas of life, medicine, social affairs, law, economics, and many more. And they have a website with the full English transcripts of everything they're studying. The group has given multiple conferences in Germany, and one of the most recent, Dr. Heiko Schoening, one of the organization's leaders, said, quote, we have a lot of evidence that the new coronavirus, is a fake story all over the world. Now, he isn't saying the virus itself is fake, but he's saying that it's not more dangerous, and these are his words, don't sue me, than the seasonal flu, or equally dangerous in that these measures that are being taken around the world, some of what we're going to talk about, the police state, are basically not justified. And a report published by the British Medical Journal has also suggested that quarantine measures in the UK as a result of COVID-19 may have already killed more UK seniors than coronavirus did at its peak. So real life consequences. Micah talked about the economic consequences. Johnny's talking about SARS and all these are all real world things going on. That's what these doctors are trying to examine. Is there truth behind the claims? And it's just more information to kind of stick in your knowledge base and ask about what's really happening. And I know, Johnny, you got a couple others in Denver.
Yeah, I got a couple quick ones. I'm not doing the Denver one. I can do that one first. Yeah. So Denver doctors may have found the answer to a pandemic mystery, which was what happened to all the heart attacks? When the new coronavirus first swept through Colorado earlier this year, baffling doctors with its myriad of symptoms and methods of spread, Dr. Brian Stauffer, the head of cardiology at Denver Health, soon began to notice a different kind of pandemic mystery. People, it seemed, had stopped having heart attacks. So
says here, at Denver Health and other large hospitals across the metro area, the number of people showing up with cardiac emergencies dropped significantly as the state imposed increasingly strict measures, encouraging people to stay at home to slow the virus. And this was not unique to Colorado. Hospitals across the country and in Europe documented the same phenomenon, had stay-at-home orders somehow also slowed heart attacks, or were people in need of medical help and they were simply just not seeking it because of the fear of COVID-19. So he did a new study from Stauffer and several Denver Health colleagues, offers the first clue to the answer in Colorado. Looking at data on ambulance calls in Denver, they found that while overall calls for service went down during the stay-at-home period, the number of people dying from cardiac arrests at home shot up. Stauffer's team found that cardiac arrests at home in Denver more than doubled in 2 weeks after a statewide stay-at-home order was issued, compared with historical averages. Even compared to more recent data, the weekly average of out-of-hospital cardiac arrests jumped to 46 during those 2 weeks versus 26 or 27 in the 3 months prior. So it's just another side effect, you know, of the pandemic. A lot of people are having other medical issues. You know, you feel something a little bit wrong with your heart. And many people already are, you know, don't really go to the hospital when they think something's wrong for the simple fear of that. But if they think that they might contract something else, then they're really going to be afraid. And unfortunately, it's not working out for a lot of people.
People are just getting afraid, and then they don't go to the hospital. They die. They die at home.
It's really sad. And it says heart disease is actually stress. In Colorado, 2020. Heart disease still has more deaths than COVID right here. Cancer has 4,318. Heart disease, 4,095. And COVID has 1,377. So there's still...
So almost as many as...
Like three times as much people die of heart disease still.
How many die? What is that in the whole nation? Or
this Colorado? Is just Colorado, yeah. Wow, this is just Colorado, but I'm sure it's probably similar. I know heart disease is the number one killer in America. That's so... yeah, and if you want to jump over, I got this other story here. This is just another case of, you know, numbers being misrepresented, you know. Died for other reasons. 10% of Rhode Island coronavirus deaths are not caused by COVID-19. It says Rhode Island officials on Wednesday revealed about 10% of the state's 1,027 coronavirus-associated deaths happened for reasons that were unrelated to the coronavirus disease. In accordance with federal standards, the Rhode Island Department of Health
defies... How often does this happen?
Huh? Well, yeah, I think they bring up a motorcycle accident in this one as well. Like, in accordance with federal standards, the Rhode Island Department of Health defines coronavirus-associated deaths as anyone who dies after recently testing positive for the disease.
Car crash.
So there we go, Dr. Birx and her liberal, you know,
how do they define
counting.
So if you die on the way,
yeah, how
home
do they
from
define
testing,
recently?
You
died so,
of COVID.
How do they define death?
So that exact reporting methods evoke criticism. I wonder why. You know, saying that someone who dies in a car crash shouldn't necessarily be included in the state's death toll.
Necessarily.
I mean,
it could have been caused by COVID because they were coughing from their respiratory thing. And then
that's the kind of things that the doctors were saying in Florida.
I heard him say George Floyd.
It says here, health director. And I mean, these aren't just random people bringing up. It's
the health director.
Yeah.
Put him on blast. Nicole Alexander Scott.
Yeah. Said Wednesday on her department. It's a girl. Yeah. Wednesday, her department is now in the process of identifying those types of deaths. Initial results show about 90% of deaths are directly tied to the disease. About 10% are unrelated, according. And she said, quote, what we're seeing now is that the majority of cases are deaths that have occurred because of COVID. She said during a weekly news conference, and also, quote, but we're continuing to develop the process for determining when it's associated, but not necessarily caused by COVID, i.e., they still haven't figured out how to count this.
How many months into this thing?
So,
out numbers?
So we're still counting it all wrong, and it's, you know, they're saying 10%, the 10% error, you know, and it could be more than that, but that –
This just reminds me, though, of what we covered about a month ago
over 100 here deaths, in Texas. Just over 100 deaths.
With the Collin County Commissioner Court, when they said the same thing, that like, hey, we're going to see a rise in deaths because deaths are being falsely or closely attributed.
And in the UK.
And a number of places. I'll add this that I just read today, Collin County here in Texas, revisiting that same place. They've now added a disclaimer on their numbers website saying we have no faith in the, like, this is literally from the Collin County Commissioner's Court.
Where you right go
for, to look for a count, it says we have no faith in the Texas Department of Health and Services data.
You should pull that.
So they kind really of added.
I want to see that.
A caveat. Right. Yeah, but
that's ridiculous, man.
Mike, and you got one as well. A Lancet study.
Yeah, let's just get into it quickly. It's an unprecedented global social and economic crisis. Right, it triggers the COVID-19 pandemic, poses grave risk to the nutritional status of several and survival of young children in low-income and middle-income countries. Of particular concern is an expected increase in child malnutrition, including wasting, due to steep declines in household incomes, changes in the availability and affordability of nutritious foods, and interruptions to health, nutrition, and social protection services. 1 in 10 deaths among children younger than 5 years in these low and middle-income countries is attributed to severe wasting because wasted children are at increased risk of mortality from infectious diseases. They don't have the nutrition they need to even form the antibodies. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, an estimated 47 million children younger than 5 years were moderately or severely wasted. And the economic, food, and health systems disruptions during COVID are expected to continue to exacerbate all forms of malnutrition. Estimates from the International Food Policy Research Institute suggest that because of pandemic, an additional 140 million people will be thrown into living in extreme poverty on less than $1.90 per day in the in 2020. According to the World Food Program, the number of people in the low and middle income countries facing acute food insecurity will nearly double to 265 million by the end. And I don't know how much time we got, but these numbers, I could keep going. It's startling. I mean, it's just unnerving that we've done such things and these nations have done such things, you know, to avoid this thing that seems to have a really small death rate. But it's turned out that, you know, in here, there's a new study that shows corona restrictions and lockdowns are leading to more than 10,000 deaths per month, like the lockdowns are. And this is what we're not talking about. And this is a global study. It's been 7 months since the first COVID-19 cases were reported. And it's increasingly clear that the repercussions of the pandemic are causing more harm to the children than the disease itself.
We're out of here, guys. We'll be back next Friday. Freethinker Radio. Tuesday. We'll be back next week at some point. We're going to be with Lion.
We'll be on tomorrow.
And if you want to hear this again, you can find us. We now have a page on or a feed on Stitcher, and we've got an RSS feed that I'll post the link in the description. And of course, you can hear us Friday afternoons on 90.1 KPFT Houston. All right, guys. We'll see you next week. This is Freethinker Radio.